Okay, and now for those of you who don't know him, and for those of you who do, I'd like to present Russell, who is going to be speaking tonight on step two.
My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic member of the Carl Gables Group. And I think what I'm going to be speaking on, well, I'm going to try to speak on step three today. I think this is a step three meeting. But who knows? Whatever. At these prices, what can you do? I sort of feel, I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 17th, 1981, so if I make it for another 3 months, I'll have put in 30 years into this deal. And well, thank you. I appreciate that. But, you know, I'll tell you, I speak a lot, and I've been flapping my jaws and doing that stuff for a long time now. But I always feel that I'll never be able to adequately convey what I really want to convey to you tonight. So, but luckily for me, since I have a relationship with God now, I leave most of that up to Him. You know, so because if it was up to me, I'd really screw it up. And so I can only hope and pray that He shows up and does His deal, because I could not possibly adequately explain in the space of 1 hour or in the space of 30 years what a difference it has made in my life, coming from where I came from as a non-believer, as an agnostic, an atheist, whatever you want, as a believer that I was God, that I was the one, that the whole thing revolved around me, to where I am today and the differences made in my life. There's no way I could adequately explain it to you. So all I can do is what was done with me by the hundreds and hundreds of speakers that I heard prior to coming in here. And I watched these guys, and I watched the way they looked, and these gals, and you know how they acted, how they treated other people. And it conveyed to me, they didn't even have to say that much, it sort of conveyed to me something. It conveyed to me that they had something going on that I didn't have, and I wanted it. And I guess that's what it really boils down to. That's what it says in the book. We can talk about the steps, we can talk about assignments, you can talk about treatment centers, you can talk about meetings, you can talk about sponsors, you can talk about anything. But the bottom line is if you don't want what we have, and you're not willing to go to any length to get it, if it isn't that important to you to get what we have, what you see we have in here, then it isn't going to matter anyway. Even if you go through the motions. And I do believe you can fake it before you make it. You can go through the motion and somehow get it, okay? But if you want what we have, if you see something in here and it excites you, and you want it, and you go for it, it will be revealed to you. And that's the deal. I'm very grateful, and I want to congratulate all the newcomers and the people that just came in here and picked up a white chip and all the initial medallions, and that's a wonderful thing. And you know, it's very important because I remember that's where I came in here. I wasn't a believer. You know, I had a guy. I told this story. I'm just going to tell you a lot of stories and stuff because it says our stories disclosed in a general way what we used to be like. So I'll just tell you some stories. Read a little bit out of the big book. I was walking out of the car room once, and a kid came up to me, a newcomer, and he said, "Are you Russell?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm Russell." He says, "You know, I hear you're." You know, my sponsor says, he says, "You're a good speaker. I should hear you speak." And I said, "Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that." He says, "Yeah, but he says you talk too much about God." And, well, you know, listen, I took it as a compliment. I guess it's all in your perspective. You know, I was a drunk, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, can you imagine? I'm a drunk, not paying child support, being irresponsible, not believing in anything. You know, suffering from all the ills that you could possibly imagine, and what they can say against me now, what's going to read on my tombstone, the indictment against me now is, He talked too much about God. You know, I'm thinking that's not a bad thing. You know what I mean? You know, I don't know about you, but I hated perfect people. I hate good people. Now, I would never say I hate good people, but the truth is, perfect people, church people, you know, religious people, make me uncomfortable. It makes me uncomfortable. It's sort of like I somehow know deep inside that they're better than me. And somehow I know I'll never be as good as them. And I know that if they knew who I was, they would judge me and hate me. And at the same time, there's something inside of me that tells me that somehow they know who I am. But I got to play the deal anyway. So I hated to go to church, or I hated to go to synagogue, or I hated to go wherever it was where the normal, good, decent people were. I wanted to hang around with my people, and it so happens, for some strange reason, my guys hung out in bars. I mean, they were the screw-ups, and they were the jack-offs, and they were the salt of the earth. I remember telling my first wife, I said, I was giving her the greatest compliment a man could give a wife. I said, why don't you come down to the bar and drink with my buddies? And she said, I know you're not going to believe this, and this isn't insulting you guys. I was insulted. She said, I don't want to go down there and drink with those bums. I'm saying, bums? These are the greatest guys in the world. These are the only people that understand me. You see, I had to be with these people. They were the screw-ups, they were the idiots, they were the, you know, and you know what we do? We'd sit around and cut up the good people, the idiots, the hypocrites, you know what I mean? And they would, you know, because somehow by being with these people, I felt either superior or at the same level, you know, or sort of like, so I hated good people. I never wanted to be around good people. They made me uncomfortable. I guess somehow if I was around them, I felt so different, I could really see somehow how bad I was, but I'll tell you what, I could certainly fit in with you guys. You know, it's funny, I don't even know why alcoholics have a problem with God. I was telling a story, it's a true story, on my way down before, maybe about a year before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, when I was starting to come to grips with the fact that I might, maybe, I don't even know what I was thinking in terms of I might have a drinking problem, maybe I was thinking in terms, you know how we try to manage and control our liquor, or we get to one and say, well, I shouldn't drink it. You know, somehow it was occurring to me that maybe I was having problems in that area. And I remember driving along I-95 in my car, going around 60, 70 miles per hour. And I was driving home, and I was saying to myself, and I used to go to the bar. I was a bar drinker. And my bar was the Alibi Lounge in the Civic Center. And I was driving in my car, and I said, I shouldn't go to the bar. I shouldn't go to the bar tonight. I'm not going to go to the bar tonight. I'm going to go straight home, you know. And I came to a fork in the road where if I went to the right, I would go to the bar. And if I went straight, I was going home. And about a mile before I hit that fork, I knew it was coming up. I took my hands. You can't make this crap up. At 70 miles per hour, I took my hands off the wheel. And I was sober. Listen. This is a very serious disease. This has very little to do with alcohol. You know, I've already gone over this. Listen to the first three tapes, you know. This has to do with how we think sober. You know what I mean? And I took my hands off the wheel. I'm as sober, as physically sober then as I am now. I took my hands off the wheels, the steering wheel, at 70 miles per hour. And I said, well, whichever way the car goes. And, you know, you have to watch, you got to be very careful at 70 miles per hour. You got to watch that steering wheel. And I noticed, you know, because I had very good sight, I noticed that the wheel started to turn imperceptibly towards the bar. That was a great car. And I grabbed the wheel, and I remember thinking, God wants me to go to the bar. God. So you know, the truth is, I never had a problem with God when he was telling me it was okay to drink. I don't think I really ever had a problem with God or saying, God wants me to do this or God's doing that. I just had a problem with following directions. Or the possibility that somebody or something might tell me no, or I have to do things differently. I had no problem with God as long as I was God. I was the person who decided who God was, what God was, and what God wanted. As long as that's going on, everything's okay with me. And so I continued to drink. And of course, you know what happened. Went through the whole thing. I crashed and burned like everybody else did. And, you know, I want to read a couple of things from the big book. And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I wasn't a believer. Now, the interesting thing is, and I mean, I'll just share this with you because it's something that happened. I think I should share it with you. The way this whole thing happened, just factually, is on Christmas Eve, 1980, I was alone at home, you know, by myself after being kicked out of a party for, I guess, being drunk and obnoxious or something like that. I mean, I guess, I don't know, I wasn't really there, you know, and it's, the whole thing's a blur to me, and I was watching The Televangelist at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I got down on my knees, and I was feeling so lonely and so bereft, and I was probably half buzzed or whatever it was, and I got down on my knees at 3 o'clock in the morning to give my life to Jesus, which probably isn't a big deal here, but to a Jewish kid from New York, it's a big thing. Hey, listen, never rob an alcoholic of his desperation. And you guys that are laughing, let me tell you something. You stay around here for 20, 30 years, you don't know where you're going to wind up. Okay, you have no idea where you're going to wind up. I gave my life to you. You know, I'd like to be able to say that I got up and like three archangels came and a couple guys came down and said, hey, we're from Alcoholics Anonymous. Here's some donuts. Here, you know, it didn't happen. It didn't, you know, sometimes what happens is the way God works, the way the Lord works, is things happen in your life, start happening in your life just from things you do, but they happen like a week later or 2 weeks later. They start, you know, sort of stuff, seeds start getting planted. Things start happening. Where did that come from? 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm all by myself. You know, it says in the book right here in Vision for You. Now and then a serious drinker being dry at the moment says, I don't miss it at all. I feel better. I'm working better. I'm having a better time. As ex-problem drinkers, we smile at such a sally. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take a half dozen drinks and get away with them. He will presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. He cannot picture life without alcohol. Someday, he will be unable to imagine life either with alcohol or without it. Then he will know loneliness such as few do. He will be at the jumping off place. He will wish for the end. I was at the jumping off place. I was wishing for the end. I couldn't envision a life without drinking. I'm home at 3 o'clock in the morning. This televangelist comes on. And I start listening to him. And I get down on my knees. I give my life to Jesus. You know, I mean, I guess that's sort of like a third step. I don't even know. I did the third step before I even did the third step. I realize that now. I later on did a formal third step. But I didn't know that. All I knew was I was desperate and I needed relief. And I was a college graduate, and I have all sorts of degrees on the wall, and all a doctorate, and all sorts of stuff, you know. And man, I could debate you if I was in a bar about whether there is a God or isn't God. But at 3 o'clock in the morning, when you've lost your soul, and your self-esteem is down the drain, and there ain't no fooling anybody because you're looking in the mirror, and you know what kind of piece of crap you are. And there's no cavalry coming over the hill to save you, and you got no place else to go. Let me tell you something. Being a smart ass doesn't work. And there was nobody there anyway, and it seemed like a good idea at the time. And I did that deal, and I just went to sleep, and I didn't even stop drinking. That was in December of 1980. I didn't even stop. I continued to drink. And all I know is about a month later, around January 17th, 16th, I got into a very bad car accident, almost killed myself, almost killed somebody else. That wonderful car that went towards the bar died in the accident. And some guy came up to my bed where I was lying in my hospital bed, and I looked him in the eye and said, I need help, I can't stop drinking. That's all I know. I said, I need help, I can't stop drinking. And that was the deal. And the last drink I had was actually that very next day. Because apparently, not even self-knowledge, not even admitting it is enough, I was so hooked on the booze that a friend of mine who's non-alcoholic, who came to the bar with a cold can of Coors beer, because cold, you can get Coors anywhere at the time, but back then, 30 years ago, Coors was like cocaine. You had to have it imported by a flight attendant. They called them, you know, from Colorado or something. For some reason, they didn't sell it in Florida. And he came up to my bed while they had the tubes in and everything like that. And he says, look what I got for you. And I just grabbed it. And all I remember, I don't remember popping the top. I just remember sucking that thing down in 30 seconds because that's how I drank. I drank for the noble art of getting bombed. I didn't drink for the taste. I drank to get drunk. I just went whack. And that was the last drink I've had up till now. And I ended up going to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't believe in, you know, it's a funny thing. I didn't believe in God. Now, I will say this to you. I've heard many people say, you know, we have a big book. The instructions are very clear to me. You see, they're very clear to me in the big book. You know, and I don't want to get into an argument with everything. It's just my opinion. This is just clear to me in the big book that it says we burn the idea into the new person's mind. We burn the idea, job or no job, wife or no wife. You can get sober as long as you trust God and clean house. That our real sobriety depends upon God. That the whole thing is about, that's when we give an AA talk, what AA talks are all about is not that we pulled ourselves up by our bootstraps. As a matter of fact, it's just the opposite. We're powerless over alcohol. Without God, we wouldn't have any help. It's the whole book is about God. And finally getting us to the 11th step where we finally have a relationship with God. And then we try to improve that relationship and then tell other people about it. As a matter of fact, on page 26 or 29 of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, when it talks about our stories, which are so important, and how we're supposed to share at meetings. You know, I know people love to share drunk logs, and then I drank, blah, 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 and then I drank, blah, 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 and then blah, blah, and then I drank. We all laugh at those. Aren't they funny? But you want to know something? I sat around bars and listened to drunk logs. There's nothing wrong with drunk logs. Drunk logs, I guess, is what pulls in newcomers so they can say, hey, that guy is just like me. No, he is. It's the way we give ourselves credibility. There's nothing wrong with a drunk log, but I have to forget that you can't stay sober on drunk logs. You know, the whole thing is not about a drunkalog. A drunkalog is what I used to be. The solution is I found a relationship with God that does for me what I can't do for myself, and I don't have to drink anymore, and I don't even have to hate anymore. And I don't even have to worry about whether you like me anymore. I don't have to worry about a whole lot of stuff. And it says, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recover. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual, in the personal stories, describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. That's the big book. That's our story. That's the deal. Later on, it says in chapter 5 that the things we have to get, the most important things we have to get in chapter 5 and how it works, it's read at every meeting that you go to. It was read tonight. It says the following in chapter 5, how it works. It says, our description of the alcoholic, the chapter 2 of the agnostics. Now listen to me. And our personal stories, personal adventures before and after. They're talking about the stories that talk about what? How we established our relationship with God. Those three things. Our description, the drunkalogue, the chapter to the agnostic, which is basically, you really ought to get over that. This sort of thinking has to be abandoned. And our personal stories about how we established our relationship with God, after listening to those three things, those will make clear to the alcoholic who's going to recover three pertinent ideas. One, it'll make clear to you. It may be fuzzy at first. It may be clear to you that you're an alcoholic and you can't manage your own life. You can't do it. You tried it. You can't. You need help. B, no human power can relieve you of this disease. No. Guys, a girl ain't going to do it. No, girls, finding a husband isn't going to do it. You're just going to end up drinking over the husband. A boss ain't going to do it. Even a sponsor ain't going to necessarily do it. And see, that God could and would if he was sought. And then it says, being convinced. Woo. Being convinced. Not even thinking, maybe. Being convinced. We were now ready for step three, which is what I'm on tonight, which is why I'm talking about it. You get it? Now listen, did you hear all that? I'm not making this stuff up. This is me reading from the book. And the newcomer comes up to me and says, but I hear you talk too much about God. Now you understand why we got problems in here. The book says do it this way. The fellowship says do it that way. Because the fellowship is the boiling down of the common denominator of everybody in here. With one hour and nobody wants to, and 90% of the fellowship doesn't want to talk about God. Because they're God. Because they don't want things, they don't want to do that deal. So somehow when you distill the fellowship, there's this sort of like aroma of, if you talk about God or you mention God or if God is, then there's something wrong. When that's the only thing the whole program is about. So if you basically stay sober on meetings alone and just bullshitting with your friends in the meetings, you'll actually think that this thing is about group therapy. Just a bunch of, you know, you'll think that basically it's like going to the bar but drinking coffee. And somehow you won't understand how you can't, that after 3 years you drink again. Or 5 months you drink again. Or 10 years you drink again. Or 20 years you don't drink again, but you're a miserable son of a bitch and you're lonely. And you don't sponsor anybody because nobody wants what you have. Well, they're all a bunch of pukes anyway. And you don't like the guys that talk about God. And somehow you'll notice that there are other people in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, those good people, the ones you can't stand. And they're always talking about God. They talk too much about God. They're the ones that were reading the book, reading the material, and had honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, which are essential for recovery. They're the ones that read in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, sections like, things like, we in turn sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, or if you prefer, a design for living that really works. We think it no concern of ours what religious bodies our members identify themselves with as individuals. This should be entirely a personal affair which each one decides for himself in the light of past associations or his present choices. Not all of us join religious bodies, but most of us favor such memberships. Most of us favor such memberships. Now, I guess you guys would think, just hanging around Alcoholics Anonymous, that AA was like anti-religion. If you listen to what's going on, you think like we're down on Catholics, we're down on Judaism, we're down on Christianity, we're down on religion. I'm spiritual, I'm not religious, because to be religious is to be goofy. It's like we're superior to religious people. Where the book says, we begin to see where religious people are right, we see how they have found something that has worked for them in their life that we could never have. We lose all prejudice, even against organized religion. That's what the book says. That's what the program says. But what the smart asses in your group says is, I'm spiritual, not religious. Because religious people are like, they're lower than us. You know, they're lower than us. You know where that comes from? That comes from something called alcoholism. It comes from ego, self, and vanity. Comes from puffing yourself up and thinking you're better than it comes from people that are going to drink. And even if they're not going to drink, you don't want what they have. You know why? Because what they have is not what the book is talking about. It's not what the founders had. It's not what they're even saying you should be like. It's not even the attitude that they say you should have. If you read the book, now of course if you don't want what we have, why would you even bother reading the book? Well, listen to anybody, just do whatever you want to do. Or, you can go later on into the chapter where it says, one of my favorite parts, because it describes so well what my real problem is. What my real problem is, after I put the plug in the jug and I realize I'm crazy anyway. Like that guy I told you I sponsored, who's now got like 27 years, he called me up after he was sober for about 1 month. He loved AA. He had stopped drinking. He was 30 days sober. And he was in Tampa, Florida. He was on a road trip and driving, and he called up and he realized something. He realized that he was crazy. Because he was thinking. Because he was sober and he was thinking. Now, some of you might have forgotten what that's like. To be 30 days or 2 days or 5 days or 5 years or 6 years or 10 years sober and thinking. And you know what you think about when you're sober. You think about yourself. You think about yourself a thousand different... Is it possible to think about yourself with 1,000 different voices? If you're an alcoholic, it is. Is it possible to have more than one conversation going on at the same thing at time about you? Listen, hey, how about this? Here's a little test question. Are the conversations good or bad? Do they make you feel good or they make you feel bad? You know, do you compare your insides and how you feel with how other people look? Do you sometimes get the feeling that everybody looks better than you're doing, than you're feeling? You know, it's your thinking. And all of a sudden you got 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, and you realize that it's not the alcohol because you're not drinking. You're just crazy. And so he called me up and he said, Russell, because he was worried. He says, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. I said, really, Tommy? He says, you really? He says, no. He says, I think I'm just crazy. And I said, well, Tommy, you can be both. I said, thank God. He was so happy because he thought he had to leave Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I started realizing at least that the problem of alcoholism has less to do with alcohol than it has to do with my restlessness, my irritability, my discontentedness, just the way I am sober. It has to do with sobriety. I'm just not built for life. I need help. And it doesn't matter how smart I am. You know something? The law degree didn't help. You know, the departmental honors in mathematics didn't help. Knowing algebraic topology didn't help. Knowing differential equations, calculus didn't help. Didn't help how smart you are. Didn't help how much money you had. It didn't matter how much money you had. As long as I had a brain and it was functioning and I was awake, it was a bad deal. And as far as I know, for all I know, it was even a bad deal when I was sleeping and I didn't know it. I just wasn't aware of it. I mean, things just weren't going. I needed relief. And then in the book it says this. This is what it says to us. It says, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Now listen to me. A's been around. Don't believe me. You know, I love this group. It's been around for 61 years. But A's been around since 1935. Okay? And this book, you know, listen. A's maybe the worst self-help program for alcoholism in the world, but I heard somebody say it doesn't really work for everybody. Well, maybe not. But it works better than any other program they got out there, I can tell you that. And this book hasn't changed in however many years, 61 years or however many years it's been around. And just like I'm telling you tonight from the podium, for 60, 70 years, they've been saying the same thing. And it hasn't been changed. And people have been staying sober to good purpose and feeling good. And this is what it says. So I happen to think it's probably true because it's worked for me. If you don't think it's true, that's fine. You blank it out and you try your own theory on alcoholism. It says, selfishness, self-centeredness, that is the root of my troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, 100 forms, which is more than one. So if you're thinking, if you say this, I know what my problem is. You probably do, but you're missing 99 that, you know, there's 99 you're not even seeing. So even if you deal with that one, they're waiting in line. Like at Wrigley Field or something, you know? That we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that sometime in the past we have made decisions based on self which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. And they arise out of ourselves. And the alcohol is an extreme example of self-will run riot, which to me is the same thing as we're addicted to self-will. We're addicted to thinking the way we think. It's not a matter of choice. It's not a matter of I'm going to wake up in the morning. I've decided I'm going to think about myself all the time. I'm going to have a million voices of myself. And you want something that's even worse than that? I can't even say I'm not going to think about myself. It's a matter of being addicted to a self-centered thinking that goes like a million miles per hour that you can never stop or run away from. There's no place you can go. There's no amount of money they have. There's nothing you can do. There's no activity you can get involved in where you can't eventually somehow go back to thinking about yourself. And you can't stop it. And somehow, some way, when you're locked into that deal, you feel crappy no matter what's going on in your life. It doesn't seem to work out. And eventually, you got to do something. Drink, eat, whatever. Something self-destructive. Carl Menninger said in his book, Man Against Himself, alcoholics in the chapter are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. Well, why wouldn't you destroy yourself when life was that horrible, sober, and nothing ever worked? Self will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, this is what it says, above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. Now listen, here's the deal. I've had people come to me and says, you know, I like the way you put that. I said, you mean when I read the book? I'm just reading. This isn't hard stuff. Just get up here and I'm just reading from the book. You know why people are amazed, you know, or sometimes come up to me and I really say, well, I really like when you said that? Because they never heard it. I read basic sections of the book and people say, that's amazing. And these are people who have actually read the book. Because they read it and they didn't even know what they were reading. It's that old alcoholic saying that I talked about when my wife said, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. If you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I get in my car, I drive 1 mile, I stop at a light, I say, what the hell did she mean by that? It's that alcoholic ability when you hear something or see something or are told something that you don't like, it confuses you, and so you wipe it out, you don't see it, you just hate the person that told you about it. So if somebody looks you in the eye and tells you the absolute God's honest truth, you say, I hate that son of a bitch, and you gossip about him, you character assassinate him all your life, and you forget him and say, he's full of shit, who needs that crap? And 10 years later, you come to the same conclusion yourself after drinking for 10 years. And you say, you know what my problem is? And you remember, maybe you remember that some guy 10 years ago told you that, but you didn't want to hear it. So there's a lot of stuff that's said in this book that's clear that we don't even see or want to see. On what our diseases are, we just don't see it. And one day some guy like me or somebody takes like a big spotlight and says, look at this! And you say, holy crap, where did that come from? Whoa! Listen to this. It says, so our troubles, you think, are based on our own making. They arise out of ourselves. And the alcoholic extreme example, self will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. You must be rid of thinking about yourself all the time. How do you do that? Listen, we must or it kills us. Listen, this is what it says. We must or it kills us. Don't go out there and say, Russell said, if I don't get rid of this, it's going to kill us. I didn't say that. Alcoholics Anonymous says, our basic text that we all agree on says, you must or it'll kill you. Not bruise you, not hurt you a little bit. It's going to kill you. It's going to somehow kill you. Then it says, you know what's the line right after that? You ready for this? God makes that possible. So I'm walking in a room, some guy says, my sponsor says, you talk too much about God. God, the only thing that's the solution in here that'll save your life makes that possible. But let's not talk about it because it makes people nervous. Because they'd rather sort of like not go in that direction. And there often seems no way of getting entirely rid of self without his aid. Many of us have moral and philosophical convictions galore. Now, listen, some of you are going to get pissed with what I'm about to say. You know some? You're going to have to deal with that. You're going to have to deal with what I'm about to say. You ever hear the words good orderly direction? Good orderly directions is for people who don't really want to work the program. That's just my opinion. 15,000 people in AA will want to lynch me because they won't like it, even though it makes perfect logical sense. Good orderly direction is for people who do not want to work the AA program. They want to water it down. Because the AA program says if a mere philosophy of life, a better philosophy, I'll do the Ten Commandments, I'll just do the next right thing, I'll just be a good boy. If it worked, we would have done it long ago. The problem is that never worked for us. Lack of power was our dilemma. We had to find a power that was greater than ourselves that allowed us to do good, orderly direction. And that means we wrote a book where we have to talk about God. And he says that's when the problems arise. And that's why they all talk about good, orderly direction. Oh, I just do good, orderly direction. Because if I'm not doing good, orderly direction, I might have to actually give my life over to God. And I don't want to do that deal. And then it says again right here, not only in chapter of the agnostics, it says, many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore. Well, what's good orderly direction except a moral and philosophical conviction? But we could not live up to them, even though we have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centered much by wishing or trying to have our power. We had to have God's help. Now listen, I was asked, enlisted to come here and do step three. I'm going to do step three. And the way I do step three is out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the great deal. If you don't remember a word I say, just go back to your home tonight and open up the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and read what they say. Unless you're so alcoholic or dishonest, because you have to be honest in order to make it here. Because rigorous honesty is what works. Unless you want to twist these words into some sort of pretzel so that black means right, and it all depends what is, you know? So you can do whatever the hell you want to do. I never had sex with that woman, you know? Just stuck my penis in her mouth, you know? It wasn't sex, you know? Unless you want to twist words and be dishonest, well, what you know what it shows? Not putting down anybody because I'm no choir boy. You know, nobody in here is. It shows how unbelievably dishonest a sober, intellectual, and incredibly intelligent man could be if he just doesn't want to admit or go the way he's got to go. And you want something? Guilty as charged. I raised my hand. I'm guilty as charged. I just want to be guilty here because that means I won't be able to get sober. This is the how and why of it. This is the how and why of it. They're going to ask me one day, how did you do the third step over that meeting? Oh, I read the big book. You what? I read on the big book. You what? We need to read. I read the big book, you know. I didn't have anything to say, so I just read the book, you know. This is the how, you know, I read the book. You know, it's a good thing about reading the book. He says, you know, I read it to myself too. I say, hey, I ought to do this shit. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. You know what people do when they play God? They decide, I'll just do good, orderly direction. They decide what good orderly direction is. They just make it up as they go along. You got to quit playing God. You got to quit taking your hands off the steering wheel and saying, well, we'll just see which way the car goes. You got to quit playing games. Next, we decide that here and after in the drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. This is describing a relationship, a father-child relationship. Most good ideas are simple, and the concept was the keystone of a new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. It's the keystone. It's the main deal. You don't get this, you don't get anything. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. You want remarkable stuff to happen in your life? You want remarkable stuff, or you just want to be hanging in there? How you doing? Hanging in there. 20 years. I'm hanging in there. Is that what you want? That's what you want? Hang in there? You can drink and hang in there. We had it all sorts of remarkable. We had a new employer being all powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and did his work well. If we kept close to him and did his work well. How does good orderly direction allow you to, and there's nothing wrong, you know, arguing against good orderly direction is like arguing against mother and apple pie. I'm not saying you shouldn't be good orderly direction, but the only way I'm capable of even knowing what good orderly direction is or knowing when I'm not doing good orderly direction is when I'm looking at him and I'm trying to follow in his steps and somehow looking at him, I know that I'm off base.
That's right.
Because he is so wonderful and incredible and I have a relationship with him and I can, just like I had a relationship with my sponsor, I can see him and I know where he's at and I know where I'm wrong and I want to be like him and I don't want to disappoint him and I know what good is and I know what bad is and I know what I'm doing good and bad unless I have a relationship with somebody or something beyond me that I can see. I can't necessarily see, but I see it. You know, you remember the Obi-Wan Kenobi? You remember the Obi-Wan Kenobi where he was, I don't know if you saw this thing with the, where he was trying to teach him how to do the lightsaber. And he's trying to hit this object that keeps on going back and forth. And Obi-Wan says, go with the Force. You know, I mean, even there, even them, they're talking about God and the, and you know, the 12 steps. And he says, go with the Force. Go with the Force. And what Luke Skywalker is doing, he's trying to follow it with his eyes. Because he's addicted to his sight. He's addicted to his sight. And what Obi-Wan is trying to say, he says, no, if you try to do it with your eyes, and you're addicted to your eyes, you will never catch it. There's another force, there's another feeling that you have to lock into, that if you can somehow lock into this force, this feeling, this force, and lock into the force, you will get it. And you remember what he did? What he did was he blindfolded him. So he couldn't use his eyes. And he had to go by his sixth sense to develop that thing so he could be with the force. And you know what we try to do by going through life? We try to use our thinking. We try to manage our own life. We try to think our way out of things. And we cannot get this thing until we stop thinking. And we're addicted to thinking. And our chief characteristic is defiance. And we defy people who tell us to stop thinking because we're brilliant. And we know better than anybody else. And they don't understand us. And we know more than anybody. And who knows me better than me? And then we just keep on falling on our faces, falling on our faces, falling on our faces. And all the sponsors say, just surrender and give it up. And our first test is whether we turn it over to our sponsor. Turn it over to another human being. It says, we're now, he says, as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose fear of today, tomorrow, hereafter, we were reborn. Who would not want that? Who would not want that? Who would not want to be conscious of his presence, lose our fear of today, tomorrow, thereafter? Then it says, say the prayer. And then after we say the prayer, it says this. It says, God, I offer myself to thee to build me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Hey, who are we talking to? You're not looking in the mirror at this one. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may be a witness to those I would help with thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Later on at sixth step, you'll see that's what separates the men from the boys. Whether you can abandon yourself utterly to him. I came to AA, I had no or very little or rudimentary idea of God or any of this stuff. Didn't believe in it. But I'll tell you what, I had a sponsor. I had this incredible sponsor, and he led me to meet incredible men. And I don't even know what they had, but it was incredible what they had. The way they treated other people, the way they were. But here's the funny thing, they were the good guys. I could tell that these guys were good guys, but, you know, I came from a place where I hated good people, and I wanted to hang with the bad people. And then I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, there was a change, I wasn't even aware of the change. That I wanted to hang with these good guys, they didn't scare me, even when they smacked me around. Even when they were unkind to me. Even when they humiliated me. Even when they say things to me like, why don't you go drink? Or why don't you just shut up? Or why don't you just do what you're told? Or your best thinking got you in here. You know, or with all your degrees, Russell, you know, the degree, what did he tell me? He says, rectal thermometers have degrees, and you know what they do with those. even in the face of abject humiliation, and he was one of the good guys, I wanted what he had, and I didn't run in the opposite direction. I didn't run away. Some people do. And you know why I didn't run away? I didn't run away because I knew that he loved me, that he cared for me. And so I followed him around. Here's the deal. I followed him around. Because I can't really tell you about the God thing except I explained to you this. I followed him around, and he led me to Joe Snyder and to Ray O'Keefe and a whole bunch of different people. But Dunbar and people in here, and they had the same deal going on. The Al Kennedys, they had the same deal. Al Kennedy, who I saw speak at a meeting, and he energized people and he excited people, and he left. And I said, that guy was great. And he says, you know, he's dying of cancer. And 3 months later, 4 months later, he was dead. And I never forgot that because I was a whiner and a crier and a thumb-sucking crybaby, and this guy was dying of cancer. He never even mentioned it. He was trying to help people. I said, listen, when you see that stuff, you know, it's one thing to talk about. When you see that stuff in front of you, and it's legitimate, it's real, and people, and they're acting differently, you're saying, I got to have that. I got to have that deal. I got to be like them. And so I hung out with them, and I noticed that every one of these guys that had what I want, every one of them believed in God. Not good orderly direction, not do the next right thing. They believed in God. They read the Bible. He gave me Sermon on the Mount. What do you think I started doing? Do you think I started thinking God was a dirty word, or it was stupid, or I'm spiritual and not religious? None of them talked that way. They all had friends who were priests and rabbis, and they all talked lovingly and decently about it. Sure, the church has its problems. How do you think I grew up? I grew up based upon my mentors, watching them. And that pretty soon, instead of worshiping, whether you want to call it worshiping or relying upon Bob Sullivan or Joe Snyder, I found myself talking to something at 3 o'clock in the morning. Now let me tell you something, and I'm going to end it right here and explain this to you the best I can. I'm going to explain it to you. I started out with a rudimentary faith. Has anybody ever been worried about something at night and you can't get to sleep? Well, let me tell you something. I know what it's like to worry about having your house foreclosed on twice. And I'm talking about years ago when it wasn't fashionable. Well, not everybody was doing it. I know what it's like. I know what it's like to raise four. I know what it's like to raise four children and not have any money in the bank and not know where anybody's going to come from. I know what it's like for a doctor to tell you you've got cancer and you've got to go through radiation therapy and they've got to do an operation. I know what it's like to go into an operating room and them telling you may not live. I know what it's like to have a lot of stuff going on, because when you live and you're surviving, you're in this thing, stuff. I know what it's like to worry about losing your job and maybe even losing your job and looking for. I know what it's like to go through the vicissitudes of life. Now, when I was younger, now I've always had sponsors and AA and all that sort of stuff, all the stuff we have in here. But at 3 o'clock in the morning, you guys aren't going to be there. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, my sponsor wasn't there. So I'm alone in my bed and I can't get to sleep and I'm worried about something. You know what I do? I talk to that God. I talk to that God. You know which God I talk to? I know which one I talk to. You know what God I talk to? You know what God I talk to at 3 o'clock in the morning? The same God I spoke to that night when I got on my knees and I said, and I turned my life over to God. Remember when I was desperate and I got down on my knees? I knew about as much about God then as I know now. I didn't go to any Bible studies or anything like that. All I know is I got down on my knees and I said the sinner's prayer. So whoever that God is, I know what he is. He's not a higher power. My God's not a higher, he's the highest power. Because my problems are just that hard, you know? I got big problems, you know? I got serious problems. So I went to the highest power. And you wanted something? When I was alone and I was desperate and I had no place to go and I got down on my knees and I asked God's help in my life, I didn't sit there and I say, well, will you tell me what color hair he has? Or what church he goes? I didn't care. I needed relief. It was only after the money came in. And after the gals came in, the car came in, they're all saying, oh, well, I don't know, maybe I ought to take a second look at this thing. You know? When I started being able to manage things to myself and stuff like that. You know? But I'll tell you, here's the deal. Here's what I'm trying to point out. This group is 61 years old. Every sponsor I've had, every man that was alive when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous 30 years ago is dead. Every single group I went to for sustenance, to survive when I was scared and stuff like that, every group I went to my first 10 years is non-existent. Every person I relied on for help in the universe 30 years ago is no longer around. You know, I know enough to know that this group may not be around 6 years from now. You know, there are many groups not around. My job may not be around. I have had enough of life to know that there is absolutely nothing that is certain. Nothing. Zero. My health isn't even certain. I may not even be around. Well, actually, I don't think I will be around next week. I'm going somewhere, but I'll be back the week before. Hopefully I'll be back. But the bottom line is, you want to know something? The guy I spoke to at 3 o'clock in the morning on Christmas Eve has never not been around. He's always been there for me. And you know, 3 o'clock in the morning tonight, he's going to be here tonight just like he's been there every time. No matter what problem I go through, he's always been there. I may not be able to get my spots, I may not get you, but you want something? He has always been there. He's the same yesterday, the way he is today, he's the same tomorrow. It doesn't matter whether this room is here. It doesn't matter whether the big book's here. It doesn't matter whether you're here, because my sobriety doesn't depend upon you. It depends upon him. And you know, when I read this book, you know what I understand? I understand that's what the book is telling me. That's why it's telling me about the 11th step and increase your faith in Him. And you know what I find? The more I increase my faith with Him, just like it says there, the more I don't think about myself. And the more I have peace, the more I feel better about myself. Now, how can I explain? I don't even know how to explain that deal. This isn't something like I walked into a room and all of a sudden 5 minutes later I read a book and poof. This is like 30 years of doing this stuff one step after the other. Most of the time thinking it's not working. This is crazy. What's going to happen? Is it ever going to get better? Is this guy crazy? Because the whole concept is so different than the way we're used to thinking, right? Listen, I beg you. You don't want to go back to the way you used to thinking. If you want to go back to the way you used to think and the way you used to act, then that only means you forgot how bad it was. And you'll get to try that deal out again. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Russell.
Thank you, Jim.
I want to thank the people that helped throw tonight and reading how it works.